Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksivas Daf Tezayin. We should be beginning the second parak. We are a little bit behind. We are on the bottom of Tezvav Amid Aleph, continuing with discussion of Kol Deparsh Meruba Kaparsha Mechza and Kol Kavuk Mechza Mechza Dami. So let's continue from where we left off yesterday. Just thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is one of the Zeh Nishma Slipa Gabriela Bashmuel. In our discussion that we had yesterday, so we got into a topic of Kavua versus Parush, and the basic rules are as follows. We generally operate with the principle of Rov. Rov tells us that the majority will determine what the item is, what the status of the item is, and that is one of the guiding principles of Halacha. Rov is a very powerful force. Rov is, the Gemara in Chulin says that Rov is stronger than Chazaka. Rov is unbelievably powerful. However, within the world of Rov, there is one detail. It's an important detail, and that is that the item in question has to be coming from a position of mobility, and it cannot be stationary. It cannot come from a stationary item. If the item in question comes from a stationary item, so then we have another principle of Kol Kavua. That means it's stationary, and Kol Kavua Kamechza Mechza Dami, and then is always going to be treated like a 50-50. And we're not going to look at the numbers. The classic example that's given, which we saw in yesterday's daf, was where I find a piece of meat. Well, let's go over both scenarios. Let's say I go into the store and I pick up a piece of meat from the store, and then when I got home, I totally forgot which store I went into. And let's say that the stores, the street is lined with kosher stores. 9 of the stores are kosher. Only 1 is selling non-kosher. And but I didn't. I don't remember which store I went into. And so what's the halacha? So since the suffix comes from a stationary item, which is a store, the store is a stationary item. So kol kavua kamechza mechza dami. So then I look at that piece of meat, and I have to say that that piece of meat may or may not be kosher. It's 50-50. It's a suffix. And we're machmir by suffix. So you can't eat that piece of meat. That would be the case of kavua. What would be the case of kol deparush, where it's separated, where it's in motion? So let's say the meat finds its way to the middle of the street. Okay, so yeah, another again, same scenario. You have 10 stores, 9 of them selling kosher, 1 of them selling non-kosher, and a piece of meat finds its way to the middle of the street. How did it get there? However it got there. Right, so a kid picked it up, a kid brought it there, maybe it fell off one of the trucks, whatever the case is. But the meat was found in the street. Since the meat now is found in the street, so that operates under the principle of called the parish maruba kaparish. And so therefore, one is allowed to eat it because it's now we operate with the principle of rov. 9 stores are kosher, 1 is not kosher, so you have the principle of rov. Why do we get onto this discussion? So it all goes back to the Mishnah that we saw yesterday. The Mishnah deals with a tragedy, a woman was raped, and who was the assailant? We don't know. So we have a principle of rov. So now remember, we said yesterday that if, let's say, the assailant went over to her, so now what does that fall under? Is that kavur or is that called a parish? So if the assailant went over to her, that's called the parish, meruba kaparish. That's that would operate under the principle of rov. If she went to the assailant, so then that means kavua, called kavua kamechza mechza dami. So that's the Gemara pointed out yesterday. We'll get back to the Mishnah. We'll give in just a moment, and we'll give the I'm going to say the correct, the accepted understanding of the Mishnah. But in other words, that's how we got into the topic of discussion.
Is it object or just subject, though? How do you determine which one is
which? Right. Yeah, the definitions of stationary and motion become are not as clear cut. I mean, in the case of the stores, I could say it over because the Gemara is very clear that if the meat was taken from the store, that's stationary. If the meat makes its way into the street, that's in motion. So that's easy because you know the Gemara says it. So all I need to do is just repeat the Gemara.
Is that Rosh Hashanah Rabbim or Rosh Hashanah?
Yeah, no. In other words, the absolute difference between motion versus stationary is not perfectly clear to me. But in other words, the simple examples I can give over. Okay. Yes, that's our next. That's a next step. That's exactly where we left off yesterday. That's where we're going to get to today. Okay, and that's perfect. And that segues now into exactly what we're going to be doing right now. Umida Araisa. So, if you're, and also just one other point, we'll recap from yesterday, and then we'll continue today. And the Gemara says that this concept of kavua is true, both l'chumra and l'kula. It can even work to help us. No, there are not that many advantages. There are not going to be that many scenarios where the Kavua is going to help us. Because remember, what does Kavua do? Kavua takes any statistics and takes all the numbers and it just simply levels the playing field, where it turns into 50-50. But in limited scenarios in halacha, that's good. That helps. What's a limited scenario? So remember yesterday we went over a limited scenario. Let's say there are 10 slimy creatures on the floor. 9 of them are Sfardim. 9 of them are... Let's do it the other way. Right, 9 of them are Shratzim. Yeah, 9 of them, perfect. 9 of them are Shratzim and one of them is a Tzvardeya. Now if I touch a dead frog, so I'm not Tame, it's only touching the carcass of 8 specific rodents, lizards, however you want to describe them, but a Tzvardeya is not one of them, a Sheretz is. So on the floor I have in front of me 9 Shratzim, 1 Sfardeya, and I touch one of them, and I'm slimy, and you know I definitely touch one of them, I just don't know which one I touched. So, if this were to occur in a Rishus HaRabim, and I don't know which one I touched, and there are stationary items, so what do we say? Kokavu Kamechsa Mechsadami. So even though chances are I probably touched one of the Shratzim, but again, based on the principle of Kavua, we take it, we take the numbers, and we level the playing field, and then now it turns into a 50-50. Because we're talking about Tumah, and because we're talking about Tumah Brishus HaRabim, what do we say about Safik Tumah Brishus HaRabim? Sfeiko Tahor. So we say that Safik is Tahor. So that's an example, right, an excellent one, and I don't get credit for that example. We saw that in the Gemara yesterday. That's an example of how the principle of Kavua can help us instead of hurt us.
Is it the principle of Kavua that helps us, or is it the principle that it's
What the Kavua principle does is it turns it into 50-50. Without the principle of Kavua, I would have said I touched the Sheretz. The 9 of those 10 little things on the floor are Shratzim. So it wouldn't have been a without Kavu, it wouldn't even have been a Safek.
So if it has been in a Rishus HaYachid,
had it been a Rishus HaYachid, then it's Sfeiko Tamei. Right, because it's 50-50 and so it's Sfeiko Tamei. Okay, good. That is all a review of yesterday. We are now continuing. Tesvav Amin Aleph. Umida Araisa Minalan. How do I know Minat? Where do we get this concept from? Okay, Amakra. V'arevla v'kamalav. Okay, so quote a pasuk from Devarim, Parsha Shoftim, in order to be tried and convicted on murder, so the Torah says, "Va'arav lo v'kamalav." You had to have ambushed him. Okay, meaning it had to have been premeditated. Okay, I'm not a lawyer; I don't know enough about the legal system here in America, but just listening to news long enough, I know. In other words, murder in the first degree, you need premeditation. You need to. I wanted to kill him, and I did exactly as I wanted to do. The Arav Alav Kamalav. Anshi's Kavan Lo. So you need to have Kavan specifically for him. However, if let's say I wanted to kill, just not him. I wanted to kill the other guy. Okay, but I missed. and instead of killing the one I wanted to, I killed somebody else. So is that, again, we're just dealing with the halacha. Is that murder tribe? Is that a capital crime? And right? And can the person be executed for doing that? So the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, now you don't see this, but it's Rabbi Shimon's opinion. The opinion of Rabbi Shimon is no. It's not a capital crime. It's terrible. It's certainly a crime, but it's not a capital crime. It's not Ritzicha. Ritzicha is where I had to have had intention to kill him, and I killed the person I wanted to kill. That is Ritzicha. Virabanan. Now the Chachamim look at that very same pasuk, and the Chachamim say, no, that's not what the Pasuk is coming to teach us. It's coming to teach us a totally different halacha. What halacha is the Pasuk coming to teach us? Kavua. Example. V'rabanan amid deber v'yanai prat lezorik evan lego. And parenthetically, by the way, and it's not even so much by the way, but parenthetically, the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Shimon. The Chachamim's opinion is, niskaven laharagetzev haragetzev, if I intend to kill, and I did, even though it's not the person I wanted to kill, that's murder. That's Ritzicha. And that's a capital crime. Okay. So, if that's true, so what did the Chachamim do with this pasuk? So they say, you know what you do with this pasuk? Let's say I took a stone and I threw it into a crowd. And the stone hit somebody. And, but we'll get to the details in just a moment. In such a scenario, I'm not going to be tried for murder. I'm not going to be convicted for murder. What exactly is the scenario? Are we talking about someone from the Canaanite nation who, if I kill, so that is not a capital crime? Again, it's a crime, but it's not a capital crime. So if nine of them are Kananim, and one of them is Yisrael, so Beinehem v'tepikle, I'm sorry, v'tepikle deruba Kananim ninu. So the Gemara says, okay, but I know that I'm not going to be convicted of a capital crime. 9 of the 10 people there are Kananim. If 9 of 10 of them are Kananim, so that for sure, no, Rove will tell me that that's not a capital crime. On the other hand, not on the other hand, sorry. And if the numbers are 50-50, let's say, in the crowd of people that were there, 10, let's say 10 were there. I threw the stone. I hit one. I killed one of them. And let's say 5 are Kananim and 5 are Yisraelim. So that's 50-50. Am I going to be executed? Safek nefashos sahakol. You're not going to execute me only because there's a 50% chance that I convicted a capital crime. Rashi quotes the pasuk. The Torah says v'itziloi ha'eda. Beis Din has a mission statement, which is you have to do justice at the same time. Anytime you can get somebody off from being executed, you should do that. Remember, Rabbi Kiva says that any court who kills more than one person in 70 years, so that's a bloodthirsty court. Beis Din has an obligation to find an exit for anyone from being executed. So if it's a 50-50 chance, we're for sure not going to execute somebody over that. Gemara says, you know what the scenario is? 9 are Yisraelim, 1 is a Kanani. I threw a stone into the crowd. It hit somebody. I killed somebody. And obviously, just to work with this case, I don't know who it was. Chances are, it was Yisrael. And not only chances, 90% chance that I kill that the person I killed was Yisrael. I should be tried and convicted of murder, right? I should be put to death. Meanwhile, the havale kanani kavu v'chol kavu kemechza mechzadami. However, because those people were stationary, so now we have the principle of kavua, and because we have the principle of kavua, it levels the playing field. It turns it back to 50-50. Now that it's 50-50, so I'm not going to be convicted of murder. So that's the scenario in which we know this principle of kol kavua kemech samach sadami.
Is a person considered inherently stationary?
Right. So again, go back to the question of the definition of stationary versus in motion. And this crowd of people are just standing there, so that's stationary. So I don't know.
Because I mean, in yesterday's story with the woman getting rid of the people from out of town, from in town, some are stationary, some are not stationary.
Right.
The people who
when you ultimately find the piece of meat in the street, so the meat wasn't moving, but meanwhile we call that in motion because it traveled from the butcher to the middle of the street. So that's in motion, even though obviously when you picked it up it wasn't moving, but that's considered in motion. So as I admitted already, I don't know the full. I don't have a good way of defining what's stationary versus what's in motion. But in this example again, all I have to work with is the Gemara's examples. In this example, clearly the Gemara views this as stationary because they're just standing there. Okay. Itmar Rav Chia Barashi Amar Rav Halacha Karav Yosi. Okay. Now, what's the halacha? Meaning, we're now going back to our Mishnah. We've covered Kavur. We covered called the Parish Meruba Kaparish, and those are very basic halachic principles. And now we go back to our Mishnah. What's the halacha? So again, remember, our Mishnah had a tragedy where a woman was raped. And we don't know who the assailant was. Our Mishnah says that if the majority of the people living in the city are kosher meaning they're not going to convert her, they're not going to turn her into a zona, so then she's kshira, she's allowed to marry a kohen. What's the halacha? So let me go back. We're on the bottom of Tezvav and Aleph. Itmar Rav Chia Barashi Amar Rav Halacha K'Rav Yosi. Halacha's like Rav Yosi, like we saw back in the Mishnah. Rav Chanan Barav Amar Rav Horasha Haisa. And the Gemara says in the name of Rav that our Mishnah is not telling us what the normative halacha is. Our Mishnah is an exception to the halacha. Exception to the halacha, meaning what's the halacha? Right, Harasha Haisa, that's a concept we see a number of times in the Gemara, not that often. But Harasha Haisa means that it was a special dispensation for a special set of circumstances. But it's not the normative halacha. If you take a look at Rashi over here, why is it a special case? Hach de Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, he's referring back to our Mishnah, Sarich Shah Haisa. It was specific to the time. Ora Sham Shar Tzidei Heker, Devarim Lahatir. Maybe there were extenuating circumstances, writes Rashi, that they felt like we could be Mako. Avaladaris Tre Rubei Be'inan. But in general, you need a double rove. Now, I know yesterday we spoke about this. Yesterday we said that there's a requirement for a double roof. But you're right. Very good. If you remember, which Ben you do, if you remember that, the Mishnah didn't say that. The Mishnah said you needed only one roof. It was a comment made by an Amora on the Mishnah that said you needed a double roof. So the Gemara, I'm sorry. So when the Gemara over here says that in the name of Rav Chanan bar Rava, in the name of Rav, that our Mishnah is a special dispensation, he's obviously understanding our Mishnah not as a double roof. He's understanding our Mishnah as a single roof. But in general, you need a double roof. Now, Mesa Rav Yirmi Oluyuchsin Labin and Trey Rube Vatanan. The Gemara says, well, I don't understand. For Yichus, for substantiating lineage, don't you need a double roof? The Gemara quotes a Mishnah. Now, this is a strange place to find this Mishnah. This Mishnah is a Machshirin. Okay, but the Mishnah Machshirin, that means it's in Tahara, so that means it's talking about Tumat Tahara, and specifically the Masechta Machshirin is describing when a food becomes susceptible to Tumah, when it comes into contact with a liquid. But, however, there's a Mishnah over there that, oddly enough, talks about Yichus. How does the Mishnah talk about it? The Mishnah over there, it's a very short Mishnah, three scenarios. Well, it's one scenario, but three different halachas. You find a child, okay, an abandoned child, okay, and you pick him up and you bring him home. So, what is the status of that child? The Mishnah says that if the majority of the people in the city are Ovdei Kochavim, the child is an Ovdei Kochavim. If the majority of the people of the city are Jewish, the child is Jewish. If it's Mechza Mechza, if it's 50-50, the child is Jewish. That's the Mishnah. Now, obviously, we need a lot more information, meaning at face value, hard to understand the Mishnah, so let's go on with the Gemara. The Gemara is going to discuss that very Mishnah. The Amar of Loshanu Allah Yoso Aval Yuchsin Lo. Rav says, even when we're describing the first case in the Mishnah, where the majority of the people of the city are Jewish, and you find an abandoned child, that doesn't mean that we're automatically going to assume that the child is Yichus Jewish, meaning we'll take care of him, we'll support him, we'll feed him. Not to say, by the way, that we have no obligation to feed a non-Jew, but in other words, it's not the same degree of obligation, not the same level of obligation, right? First and foremost, take care of family, and you take care of Jews, and then, there's an obligation for non-Jews after that, but in terms of the priorities, first thing you do is you take care of the Jew. So the Gemara says, but it doesn't mean that the child has a yichus. And Shmuel says that you can save him on Shabbos, which we're going to come back to Shmuel's statement in just a moment. But what, for the time being, put Shmuel on the back burner and just look at Rav's statement. What does Rav say? That if I have a scenario where I find an abandoned child in the city and the majority of the people in that city are Jewish, what's the halacha? Child, as far as the yichus is concerned, the child is not automatically a Jew. Now, of course, later in life, if he wants to convert, he absolutely can, but the assumption is not that the child is a Jew, even though the majority is a Jew. What do you see? That for yichus, one roof is not going to be sufficient. You need a double roof. So the Gemara says, Ishtamute hadam rav yudah marav b'kornash shol tzipor hava maisa. So the Gemara says, yeah, you remember yesterday's daf? And if you don't, it's fine. The Gemara says, I'll remind you. Remember yesterday we said that the only way to understand our Mishnah, that this woman who was violated, she is kosher only when it's a double rov. That's the way to understand the Mishnah. So we're fine. Meaning, the understanding of our Mishnah here in Ksuvos is perfectly aligned with Rav's understanding of Machshirin. One rov is not going to be enough for Yichus. You need a double rov. Ula Rav Chanan bar Rava Damar Rosh Ha'Isa Kashya. So the Gemara says, yeah, but then how did you understand the statement of Rav Chanan on the bottom of the previous Amud, where he said that Mishnah Machshirin, our Mishnah in Ksuvos is talking about Harasha. It was a special dispensation. He's obviously assuming that Amish is talking about one rove, not a double rove. Hamad masneha, lo masneha. So the Gemara says that point. You're right. Meaning, though, the statement of the original statement of Rav that Amish is talking about a double rove is not going to fit in line with the statement of Rav Chanan, who also happened to have been quoting Rav, that Amish is talking about our Mishnah is a special dispensation. In conclusion, just the Gemara is very clear. In order for Yichus, you need a double rov. Why do you need a double rov? We'll go back to what we said yesterday. Generally speaking, one rov is all you need in order to establish a status. But as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, that for yichus, for lineage, so malu asu biyuchsin. The chachamim were extra protective about yichus, and so therefore there's a requirement of a double rov. That's true in our Mishnah Ksuvos, and that's true also in the Mishnah Machshirin as well. Okay. We quoted the Mishnah Machshirin, and the Gemara does not want to give up an opportunity in terms of looking at the Mishnah, analyzing the Mishnah, so that's what we're going to do right now. For the rest of the Perek, we're going to analyze that Mishnah Machshirin. So again, we now know that the first statement of the Mishnah Machshirin, I find an abandoned child. A majority of the people of the city are Jewish, the child's Jewish. We now know, we already went over this, that we don't, for Yichus, the child is not Jewish. It just means that you have, just like a Jew, you take care of him. And the Gemara now is going to go in more detail. Okay, that's the Mishnah Machshirin. Okay, so Rav says, again, we're just going over. Rav says that he is not a Jew in terms of Yichus. Even if the majority of the people in the town are Jewish, he's not automatically a Jew for Yichus. Now we're going to come back to Shmuel's statement. Shmuel says that if it's on Shabbos, so your Mechal Shabbos to save this child. Because the majority of the people of the city are Jewish, so he's Jewish. We have enough assurance that he's Jewish, so you're Mechal Shabbos. The Gemara says, I don't understand. When it's talking about Pekuch Nefesh on Shabbos, you do not work with statistics. You don't go with Rov. Meaning, right? A simple example would be, let's say there's a rubble, and somebody's underneath, probably dead. I know that's hard to ascertain, but let's just even say it. He's probably dead. It doesn't matter. When it comes to Shabbos, we don't look at the statistics. If there's a chance that we have to save his life, even if it's a minimal chance, you take the chance. So the Gemara says, I understand. For Pikuch Nefesh on Shabbos, even if there was only a chance that he were a Jew, that's enough. So Alek Yidmar Dishmol Reisha Yidmar. So the Gemara says, you're right. Shmuel's statement is not going on when the majority of the town is Jewish. Obviously, you'd be involved in pikuach nefesh. The Mishnah is talking about where the majority are non-Jewish. Even then, you're involved in pikuach nefesh. Fine. That's Shmuel's statement. So now the Gemara says, okay, now we said that if the majority of the people are not Jewish, the child is not Jewish. Legabi which halacha? Meaning for Shabbos, you're mechal Shabbos. So legabi which halacha? Marafapa lachil nevelos. Oh, the halacha is that you can feed him nevela. Meaning, because the majority of the people of the city are not Jewish, and because we found this child abandoned, so in terms of Isav Heter, so you don't have to treat him like a Jew.
There's no question of Litneiver. Possible Litneiver.
Again, it's possible, but the statistics are telling us that he's probably not a Jew. For Pikuach Nefesh, we'll save him. But in terms of Isav Heter, we don't have to treat him like a Jew. And we can give him Nevela. Imrav Yisrael Amai Hilchasa, Amra Papa Lach Zilo Aveda. Now, in terms of the halachas of Imrav Yisrael, the majority of the people of the city are Jewish. This child is deemed to be a Jew. Legabi, which halacha are we talking about? The Gemara says, Aveda. You find a lost item and he claims it. Now, let's keep this mission as simple as possible. Let's talk about where he gets older. So he's not a child, and we're not then having a discussion of returning a lost item to a child, which in of itself is its own discussion. Let's assume that he's older and he has now a legal claim to get that item back. So because he was abandoned and because the majority of the people in the city are Jewish, so therefore you have an obligation to return it to him. Certainly sounds like from a Gemara that for a Kanani there is no obligation to return back a lost item. That's essentially what the Gemara is saying. You take a look at Rashi. Rashi discusses that. Rashi lahaftu lo aveda. So see Rashi for a discussion of that point. Mechsa Yisrael amai hilchasa. Now the Mishnah Machshirin says that if the town is 50-50, 50% Jewish, 50% not Jewish, so then we treat the child like a Jew. Now in terms of Shabbos, you're always going to violate Shabbos to save him. In terms of Aveda, you need the majority of the people in the town to be Jewish. So in order for him to rightfully claim the item, it would be returned to him. So when we're saying that the town is 50-50, which halacha are we referring to over there? I'm Reish Lakish l'Nezikin. So Reish Lakish says we're talking about Nezik damages. The Gemara is The Gemara articulates exactly what we're talking about. Hechidami. Inema did not chay Torah didan le Torah diday. Is it that our ox gores his ox? So le malay. I see right. Yisrael avishkol. So we're going to say to him, look, when it comes to Nezek, so shor shal Yisrael shenagach shor shal akum pater. There's an exemption. So well, he's now 50-50. So 50-50, you're not going to take money out of my hands on only a 50% claim. That's not enough. Hamotzi mechaver al avarai. You're going to take money out of my hands. You need to be in the absolute proof. Lo tzricha denachei Torah didei l'Torah didan. So the Gemara says the case in question is where his ox damages one of our oxen. Palga mishalem. So what's the halachas? I know this is the beginning of Baba Kama. This is basic Baba Kama. If it's a short time, if it's an ox that has no history, so doing damages, you only pay half damages. That's true by a Jew, by an ox owned by a Jew. An ox owned by a non-Jew, he has to pay, even from the onset, full damages. So his ox now is goring one of our oxen. So he will reach into his pocket and he'll pay half damages. Okay, the idach palga. What about the other half? Meaning, right? Wait a second. Aren't you not Jewish? Don't you owe full damages? Amar lahu, and his response now is a very good one, a halachically legitimate response. I see. Right, the lavisol on the asan lachon. So he says, look, there's a 50% chance. Again, we're talking about the child who was abandoned, who is 50-50, meaning the population of the town that he was found was 50-50. You're saying that I owe you the other half because I'm not Jewish? Bring a proof. In other words, you're trying to extract money out of his pocket. You need to bring proof positive that he's not Jewish. You don't have that. It's only 50-50. So then you no longer have that ability to extract the second half out of his pocket. Okay, so...
But is he considered a chaver if he's not Jewish?
If he considered a
not
relevant to the discussion. The discussion over here is strictly Yisrael versus Akum. Mm. Okay, Hadrolach Basul Anise said is the end of the first parak. Okay, let's start down now. Beginning of the second parak, as you will see, at the beginning of the second parak is really just a continuation of the first parak. In fact, today's daf Tezayin, is really just going to be a wonderful review of everything we learned in the first parak. So when we get to the Gemara, just strap in and get ready to go over a nice review. But before we do that, though, let's learn the Mishnah together. Ha'isha shenisar malon shenisgarsha. A woman is widowed or divorced. Heal marriage basil nisasani. And now, obviously, there's no ksuva document, because then we would not be having this discussion if there was an actual document, piece of paper. But, okay, but her settlement, her ksuva settlement, is in force even if there is no piece of paper. Okay? Every time a woman gets married, the Chachamim mandated that he is on the hook for a ksuva, and so therefore he has to pay it. So if she's widowed or she's divorced. Now, by the way, if she's widowed, obviously the husband's not making a claim. It'd be very difficult for him to do that. He's 6 feet under the ground. The Mishnah here in this case is talking about his estate. If a woman is widowed or divorced, he omers basul nesasani. And so now the point of dispute, what a simple and basic point of dispute. She says, you know, when we got married, I was a basula, meaning I'm entitled to 200. And his counter argument is, what are you talking about? You were not a basula at the time of marriage, right? For you, this was a second marriage. And this is, I know it's such a funny debate that these two are having right now. But again, we have to assume in our Mishnah that there's no documentation. There's no actual ksuva that was written. And this is the kind of debate we're having. So now, who's the burden of proof on in order to make the case of whether or not when she got married, she was either a basula or she wasn't a basula? Interestingly enough, im yesh edim shiyatza behenuma verosha parua ksuvasa masayim. If she can bring witnesses that says that she went out the way that the basula normally goes to the bridal canopy, with something called an henuma, the Gemara later on is going to discuss exactly what that is, and her hair is draped over her shoulders. That's how the basula walks down to the canopy. So then she'll get a ksuva of 200. Meaning, burden of proof is on her. She's got to bring out witnesses. If she doesn't bring out witnesses, then she's not going to get her 200. The Gemara is going to ask the question. Hopefully everyone here is thinking about this question. Didn't we just spend the second half of the first parak going over who we believe? In a he said, she said. Haven't we been spending the last 3-4 blot of Gemara discussing who we believe? And what has been the accepted halacha? The accepted halacha has been going like Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel says we believe her over him. So, is our mission going like Rabbi Gamliel? Certainly doesn't sound that way. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to ask that very question. Rav Yochanan ben Broka Omer Av Chila Klayas Raya. Rav Yochanan ben Broka says, you know, even the distribution of your roasted grains, that's also good proof that she was a basula when she got married. Rashi points out that there was a minute back then. I know I grew up in America. I think about the throwing of the rice. But that's not exactly what the Mishnah here is referring to, not at least according to Rashi. Rashi says that on the day of the chuppah, so there was a minhag. You want to see the Rashi inside. Klayos, Rashi writes, kisha shibol and lachem yafshem osam betanur vein klayos and mesukin laolam. No, I wanted to read the previous Rashi. Well, anyway, this Rashi describes how it's sweet and delicious if you take kernels of grain and you roast them. But the previous Rashi, regilim hayu lechalik klayos lahatinokos benisui abesulos. So when a besula gets married, so there was a distribution of the klayos, the roasted grains, to the children. Okay, that's an old minug. So
we get the rice.
I suspect that they're connected, but you know, that's just me speculating. Umode Rav Yehoshua Barom Lechavera. Okay, fine. I'm sorry. Let's throw in a pause at this point in the Mishnah. Okay, so Mishnah is again getting involved in cases of he said she said, and as I pointed out already, just reviewing. Oddly enough, the burden of proof is on her. She says that she was a besulah when she got married. And now at the point of the settlement of either divorce or a widow, and she's talking to the estate, she says she was a virgin, they say, no, you weren't, and she has to bring Adam. That's our Mishnah, and our Mishnah does not seem to be going in line with Rabbi Gamliel, and the Gemara is going to address that question, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. We move on in the Mishnah. Umo de Rabbi Yehoshua. But Rabbi Yehoshua will concede to the following point. Meaning, remember, the two principal people involved in the debate so far in this Masechta has been Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Gamliel says we believe her. He's been saying that all along. We have our Mishnah over here. Now, we don't know who the author of this Mishnah is, the first half of the Mishnah. We're going to come back to that. But now we have Rabbi Yehoshua saying, and you know, I agree with you. And presumably, of course, he's talking to Rabbi Gamliel, because in the context of our Mishnayos, that's who he's been talking to. Umode Rav Yehoshua ba'omel lechaver sadezeh shel avich haisa ulekachtia heimenu shehu ne'eman. I'm sorry, lekachticha heimenu shehu ne'eman. Let's say I've been sitting on this piece of property for years. I have no documentation. I don't have a deed. I don't have title. I have nothing. And I go and I address the following. I say, you know, I go over to my neighbor or whoever, and I say, you know, let me tell you a little bit, let me teach you a little history lesson. This property used to belong to your father. You never knew that. I'm telling you, this property belonged to your father. And I purchased it from him. Interesting. Well, do you have any documentation that you purchased it from him? No, I have no documentation. I don't have one shred of evidence. Rabbi Yehoshua says, I'll believe him. Even though I've been showing throughout the end of the last parak, and right through this Masechta, that I don't extend credibility. In this case, I do extend credibility. Why? The Mishnah over here gives us a basic rule. Shapesha asur hu apesha yeter. Because this person has been squatting on this property. He was the one who advanced the incriminating information. He's the one who said, let me teach you a little history about this property. He volunteered that information. And because he volunteered the information, this property belonged to your father, so therefore, he got himself into the pickle, he can get himself out of the pickle as well. This is the principle of Pesha Asur or Pesha Hitter. The mouth that creates Isser is the same mouth that could create Hitter. But then the Mishnah points out the obvious deduction, but the Mishnah spells it out. But what if he says, what if he didn't say the land belonged to the father? Let's say witnesses came forward and witnesses said, hey, that land didn't originally belong to him. That land belonged to somebody else. So now, he's not volunteering the information. Now, he's put in a position where he has to defend himself. If now he's in a position where he has to defend himself, his word by itself is not going to be enough.
Wouldn't that be a miko? If in this second case, wouldn't that be a miko? Because the information is not known. He could have protested, but he admitted part of it.
And he could have protested, but he didn't. In other words,
I know, but then that would not make it miko.
There are now witnesses that said there was a previous owner, so he has to declare proof that he owns it. Now there is a Baba Basra discussion that we could have over here. In other words, we have a chazaka when a person lives on a land for 3 years uncontested, so then the land is assumed to belong to him. So just to make our case a little more understandable, let's say that the 3 years haven't passed. Just I didn't see anybody say that, but let's just assume that that's the case, so that we can have a discussion. Okay. Taima, let's go right into the Gemara. Tezayin Amud Aleph, the Gemara begins. Taima Dika Edom Haleka Edom Baal Mehemen. Okay, we're going back to the first case of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that in the case where there's a dispute between the now ex-husband and ex-wife in terms of how much of a ksuva do I owe you, she's saying 200 because she's arguing Besula. He says 100, he's arguing you were not a Besula. This is your second marriage. So who do we believe? Without witnesses, we believe him. Gemara says, "Who's that?" So lema tanan stama de lo karam and gamliel. So the Mishnah, the Gemara makes what seems to be the very simple observation. Our Mishnah is not going like Rami Gamliel. Rami Gamliel has been saying now, Mishnah after Mishnah, that we believe her, not him. Our Mishnah is saying we believe him, not her. E Rami Gamliel ha'amar imam. No. Okay, the Gemara is bothered by this question. So I feel it him Rami Gamliel. The Gemara says, no, our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Gamliel. And even though in the previous perek, we have been, Rabbi Gamliel has been believing the woman every single time, but this case is different. Why is this case different? Ad kan lo kam Rabbi Gamliel hasam ela babar v'shema. Because in all the previous cases that we did, and you can go over it, and you don't have to, because we're about to do it right now. In all those cases that we saw in the previous perek, so those were all cases where she was making a claim. She was sure. She knew the facts. He was making a counterclaim, but he was speculating. He didn't know. So her claim is a bari. His claim is a shema. Where Rami Gamliel says, bari v'shema bari adif. If her claim is definitive, coming from a point of knowledge, his claim is only speculation, we believe her over him. That's true in all those cases. Over here, I'm sorry, ha'asam ela bari v'shema. Avahacha, but over here in our case, bari u'bari lo. Lo amar. But over here, let's go over the claims. She's saying she was a basula at the time of marriage. She knows. He's saying, yeah, you know what I know? I know you were married before. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm telling you, you were married before. And this is for your second marriage. So I understand, hard to find any middle ground between these two claims, but that's not the point. The point is, she's making a claim that she knows. He's making a claim that he knows. He's not speculating. He knows, at least again, in his mind, he knows that she was married previously. These counterclaims are bari v'bari. And who's holding the money right now? He's holding the money. So we have two claims. Both of them are bari. He's holding the money. So our Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Gamliel. And the Gemara says, and you know what? Now that we realize the difference between this Mishnah and all the other Mishnahs that we've seen so far in this Masechta, the Gemara says, that's a very basic difference. In other words, you know, it's funny. Now that we know the answer, the Gemara is going back, and what was the question? Of course this case is different. So the Gemara says, no. Habari Bariyu. This is a case of Bari and Bari. It's fundamentally different than all the other cases. So the Gemara says, Kevin Rav Nelshim Basulas Nisayes Ki Bari Vishem Adami. Gemara says, I still could have argued. The questioner thought the following. Look at our Mishnah. Look at her claim. Her claim is that when we got married, she was a Basula. His claim is, no. You've been married before. So it's true. both parties are making claims that they're sure about, that they know. But her claim is supported. What is it supported by? The Gemara says, supported by a rov. Usually when women get married, they're getting married for the first time, statistically. Okay. And so therefore, her claim is bari plus rov. What the Gemara now is suggesting is, this is what the questioner thought, that if her claim is bari plus rov, that's better than his simple bari.
What if you could prove that they got married on Thursday night?
Okay, the Mishnah does discuss what is excellent evidence in terms of saying standing issue is a basula. But right now we're dealing with a more fundamental issue of who is the author of this Mishnah.
So that's when you bar it with saying that she was married.
How could it be? What do you mean?
Without any witnesses. I mean, she's. How does he know that she was married?
Because in the second or third date. While during the courtship, she explained to him, "I've been married before." Okay, fine. Or he knew the ex-husband. Again, the point is, unlike all the, in other words, if you go back over, and we're going to do this in just a moment, if you go back over all the other Mishnayos, he doesn't know; he's guessing. Here,
he knows.
In his mind, he knows. V'hachinami mistarba midiktani moda Rav Yeshua, and the Gemara says, and you know what? You're right. Meaning that the author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Gamliel, and you're right. And I'll tell you how I know you're right. Because look at the next part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Umode Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua agrees. Iyamar Bishlama Aydi Rabbi Gamliel Bamode Shapir. Look, I understand the exchange in the Mishnah. If the first half of the Mishnah is Rabbi Gamliel. Because essentially, here's how the dialogue is going in our Mishnah. After having gone through the previous parak, where Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua are battling it out. Rabbi Gamliel says, we believe her. Rabbi Yeshua says every time, no, we believe him. And they're battling out. When we get to the second parak of our Masechta, we have a truce. Where Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Yeshua, you know what, Rabbi Yeshua? Here's why I'm going to agree with you. It's not a truce. they're still battling it out in all the other cases. But here, Rabbi Gamliel turns to Rabbi Yeshua and says, you know what? Here's the case where I agree with you.
Or do you agree with me?
Wait. That's step two. Meaning, step one in our Mishnah is, I know it doesn't say the word Rabbi Gamliel, but what the Gemara is arguing now is, Rabbi Gamliel says to Rabbi Yeshua, I'm going to agree with you in this case. And the reason why is because this case is fundamentally different. As opposed to all the other cases and we've been arguing about, her claim was Bari, his claim was Shema, I'm going with Bari. But in this case, in this Mishnah, her claim is Bari, his claim is Bari, I'm going to agree to you. And then Rabbi Yeshua also is a little bit conciliatory. Rabbi Yoshua says, oh, okay, good. And here's where I'm going to agree with you. Umode Rabbi Yoshua. And Rabbi Yoshua says to Rabbi Gamliel, I'm going to agree with you in the case of the field. Having nothing to do with women, but that's not the point. The point is that I do agree that when a person makes a claim, there's going to be a time where I'm going to extend to him full credibility. Like, for example, hey, you didn't know this, but your father owned the field. And I bought it from him. That's a case where Rabbi Yeshua says to Rabbi Gamliel, I'm extending him full credibility. And you know why? Hapesha asur hu hapesha yitir. Good. Ela'i amar lo'ai Rabbi Gamliel b'mode. I'm sorry. Lo'ai Rabbi Gamliel b'mode Rabbi Yeshua l'man mode. And then, if the first half of our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Gamliel, so what's Rabbi Yeshua admitting to? Meaning, Rabbi Yeshua says to Rabbi Gamliel, I agree to you. But what? I understand. We never had Rabbi Gamliel make an admission to Rabbi Yeshua. So what's Rabbi Yeshua? Who is he responding to? So mitzvah. So now the Gemara is going to do as follows. Look, we've just gone through about a half dozen Mishnayos, less, where we had Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. What the Gemara now is going to argue is that maybe the author of our Mishnah is not Rabbi Gamliel. Maybe. And maybe when Rabbi Yeshua says, I admit, his admission is not going on this case, but maybe the admission of Rabbi Yoshua, Moda Rabbi Yoshua, is going back on one of the previous cases. And so what we're going to do now for the rest of whatever part of the daf we can get through, is we're going to go over every one of the cases that we saw previously in the previous parak, and we're going to see where does it make most sense to say Rabbi Yoshua's admission to Rabbi Gamliel's claim. Okay, so umitzvahs Rav Yoshua hai pirkin kai, amigo kai va pirkin kamakai. Rav Yoshua is actually going back to the previous perek, and he's going back an amigo. Ahaya ilema aha. So the Gemara says, let's go. Mishnah by Mishnah. Haitham Ubers Varma Lamativa Shulbers and Mishponi Vakornu Reming Emil of Rabbalaz Armim, Nemen's Rev Yeshua Armalomi Pionu Chaim. The case is where she's pregnant. She wasn't married. She's having a baby. Who's the father? She identifies a man. Reming Emil says, we believe her. Rev Yeshua says, no, we don't. Now, that case over there, could she have made a better claim? Gemara is about to point out, no. Right now, she's pregnant. She's making the only claim she can, and which is, I know the father is a fit individual, right? So the Gemara says, my migu ika, ha-kresa ben shina. That's not a case of migu. Meaning, what we're looking for, let's make sure that we understand what the Gemara is searching for right now. The Gemara is searching for a case where she made a claim, she could have made a better claim, and Rav Yehoshua says, I don't care. Meaning that's not gonna move the needle of credibility. But Umod Rav Yehoshua, but Rav Yehoshua says, but I will agree, however, where in the case of a man sitting on a field telling the person, you know, your father owned it, but I bought it from him, there I do agree. So now the Gemara is gonna go through all the scenarios that we saw in the previous parak where we're looking for a case where she could have made a better claim. So she is with a man. She's talking to a man. And we say to her, who is the man? And she says, oh, he's somebody who is fit, who is not puzzle. And it's not going to make me, and it's not going to make me a zona. So do we believe her, yes or no? So machlok is Rabbi Gamaliel, Rabbi Yeshua. Now again, is she have a better claim? So also my migu ika anichlas yiridamar my medaberes nistera migidui by amar lo nivalti v'kamar nivalti mehemna. Now according to Ziri, actually she does have a better claim, because according to Ziri, what's the case? She secluded herself with a man, so her better claim could have been very simple. Look, I know we went into a private area. I know we shouldn't have, but nothing happened. That's a better claim she could have made. She admitted that she had relations. Once now she's in a position of having a better claim, so Rabbi Gamliel says, good, we believe her. Rabbi Yehoshua says, no, we don't. But now I understand, umod de Rabbi Yehoshua, but Rabbi Yehoshua would agree that hapesha asur or hapesha itter, in the case of the field. That works out great.
But isn't that migu?
It's the Gemara is about to point out at the bottom of the Amud, it's super migu, which I know you love that terminology. But you'll see why. Ella la Ravasi Damra my Midaberas Nivalas my Migu Ika. But according to Ravasi, he said, you know what the Pshat in the Mishnah is over there? It wasn't Midaberas is a Lashon, it's Lashon Naki. It's a clean language. It actually means that witnesses saw that she had relations with a man. Okay, now that she had relations with a man, the best claim she can make is the man was fit. He was kosher. Ve'alaha, he omers mukadeis ani v'homer lo ki ala drusa sishat. So the we go back to the Mishnah where she says mukadeis. I lost my besulim, but it was an accident. It wasn't because of a man. And he says no, it was because of a man. And once again, there's a debate whether we believe her, we don't believe her. Hasa my migu ika. The Gemara says now. What's her better claim? She made the best claim available. Now, Bishlam the Rabbi Lazar Damra Bemanavelo Klum. Now the Gemara says again, you have to remember what was the dollar amounts that each one was claiming. So according to Rabbi Lazar, her dollar amount that she was claiming was 100. His counterclaim was, no, you're not entitled to anything. So the Gemara says, Migudi by Amra Mukadeis Anitachtech, the Islam Asayim, the Kamra Mikar Delaisla Elamana Mehemna. So according to Rabbi Lazar, she actually could have made a better claim because she could have said, Mukadeis Anitachtech, meaning not only did I lose my Besulim, but after the Erusin. So I'm really entitled to the full 200. So Ella Rav Yochanan Dam Rabbi Masai Mumana my Migu Ika. But the Gemara points out that according to Rabbi Yochanan, her claim of Mukadeis is actually entitling her to 200, so like Rabbi Meir, so then she's making the best claim possible. Ella aha. So the Gemara says it's going on this Mishnah. Her claim is, look, I was violated after Kedushin, and it's not It's unfortunate for you. I mean, it's also unfortunate for me, but it's unfortunate for you. And his claim is, no, this happened before Erisin, and you didn't tell me. Now here, here, she absolutely had a better claim that she could have made. Instead of admitting that she was violated, she could have said, I was mukareitz. And we know the difference between what she's saying and what she could have said is that if she'd said mukadesh, she would have been fine to marry a kohen. By saying that she was violated, that means that she can't marry a kohen. And Rabbi Gamliel says, in that case, we believe her. And now, what Rabbi Yeshua is saying is like this. Rabbi Yeshua and our Mishnah, I don't agree with you by that migu. That migu is not a good one. It's inferior. I will give you a case, however, where I think I am going to believe a person, and that is the case of the field. I bought the land. This field belonged to your father. I bought it from him. In that case, we do believe him. To which now we're going to end the daf off with a simple Q&A, and that is michti. Hi migu, hi migu. I don't understand. Let's then now ask from Rav Yoshua's perspective. In the case of where she says, I was violated, and she could have said, I was mukareitz, Rav Yehoshua says that's an inferior migul. Over here, when he admits that the land belonged to your father and I bought it from him, that's good. We believe him. What's the difference? The Gemara says, Maishna ha-migul ma-ha-migul. What's the difference? Hacha ein shur shachu lefanecha, hasam hare shur shachu lefanecha. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the difference is. In the case, in the previous case, in the previous parak, she doesn't have besulim, okay, and now she needs an explanation, meaning she's already behind the eight ball, and now that she's in a compromised position where it demands an explanation in terms of why is that you lost your besulim. Now it's true she gave one argument, she could have given a better argument. But either one of those arguments is coming now behind the facts. The facts on the ground is she needs to give some sort of explanation why she doesn't have a besulim. In our case over here, the field, he could have just been quiet all the time. He's been sitting on the field. No one's been saying anything. There has been no accusations. He's offering information that's incriminating, and then he explains, but I bought it from him. So there wasn't a scenario in which there was an explanation that was demanded. So, in the previous case, it's an inferior migul because the Gemara is using the expression, shur shachu lefanecha, the ox has been shechted. And now we need an explanation of, well, what happened? That's the case where she didn't have her besulim. Our case over here, no ox that was shechted, meaning we're not demanding an explanation. He's providing one. He's volunteering one. That's the difference between the two cases. Okay, we'll stop over here. So, we started the second parak today, finished the first parak. We went through the Mishnah Machshirin and gave a number of various explanations of that Mishnah Machshirin. For Yichus, you need a double rov. That was Gemara's conclusion. Then we started the second parak. In the second parak, we went over a scenario in which he said, she said, and we believe him over her. Is our Mishnah going like Rabbi Gamliel? Most probably. Although the Gemara contends that you don't necessarily have to say that. Why would Rabbi Gamliel say we believe him as opposed to her? Because unlike the previous Mishnahs where her claim is Bari and his claim is Shema, in this case, both his and her claim are both Bari. And then finally, the Rabbi Yoshua's admission that in this case where I'm sitting on a field and I say, I bought the field from your father owned the land and I bought it from him. Rabbi Yeshua says, that's a good migu. What was he addressing? We spent in the entire Amud Aleph discussing which Mishnah was he addressing, which case is a inferior migu. We finally arrived at the case where it's an inferior migu. Why is that inferior and this is superior? And the answer is because in that case, they demand an explanation, as opposed to our case of the field, there was no explanation that was demanded.